Now we are going to move along to an area that is growing and growing and growing. Earlier this year, the actor Gwyneth Paltrow, who sometimes can appear to be a bit of a flake, but anyway, she spoke of her, quote, big family honeymoon, when she, her new husband, their respective children, her ex-husband, the musician Chris Martin, and his partner all holiday together. I think many people might find a complete nightmare. But anyway, if it works, it's fantastic. Her extended family is, of course, mirrored by many families across the country. And we're going to discuss the dynamics of what is called a blended family with Joanna Fortune, psychotherapist, author of 15-Minute Parenting. What do you think of that?
I think, I mean, it's rarely that I find myself admiring or even agreeing with something Gwyneth Paltrow does or says, to be honest. But I did read that and go, well, fair play to her and everyone involved for managing that. But I think it's, you know, Marianne, it's representative of a family that have reached a position in their respective relationships whereby there is no animosity between the various adults. Everyone is happily moved on. Everyone is happily recoupled. They famously uncoupled at the time. Conscious uncoupling, I think, was her phrase. But everyone has their, and they are in a place where they don't harbour ill will or any strong feelings or emotions in terms of attachments to each other. They've reached a place in their relationship where they are friends and can co-parent in a cohesive, calm, consistent way. In lots of ways, that's the holy grail of blended families right there. But it, I think for anybody who is maybe starting out in a blended family or maybe isn't there yet, not to throw your hands up in despair and go, well, goodness, we're nowhere near that. I must be failing. That's really the end of a long process. They didn't start there either.
Would you figure?
I would absolutely figure.
Or is it just kind of Hollywood approach?
Well, then I think it's not real. You know, then it is something of a performance for everyone else's benefit. I think when we, if we are being real, it doesn't matter if you're a huge Hollywood star or you're just Joe Bloggs from the middle of Ireland. It doesn't matter, because actually we all have human emotions, and we are, as human beings, we're wired to connect. We are relational beings. But that brings with it a myriad of emotions that get stirred up and activated when we are together as well as when we are apart. And the process of coming apart and coming together is something that the word process is very relevant to. It doesn't just happen. We make it happen together.
I presume if there are no children involved, that makes matters a heck of a lot easier. But if there are children involved, and presumably depending on their ages and their personalities and their attitude to the breakup of their parents' marriage and all those kind of complex things, how do you go about managing that?
You start really slowly, and you start by trying to consider it from everybody's perspective, which is something that as an adult we can do, but as a child we cannot. So it is incumbent on the adults involved to really consider this. I'm a big fan and often use the phrase that when in doubt, go to A&E, acceptance and empathy. So when it's all seeming...
People dread going to A&E.
A&E, don't they just? But I think that's where you will get that connection back. And I think with your children, when they're struggling to make sense of something, if we can accept their struggle, empathize with how difficult it is, we can then say, look, I'm here with you. I will help you get through this. That's not to say that it's carte blanche on the boundaries, because if children, as children do, depending on age and development, if they're acting out against the decisions of adults, I don't want you to do this, I don't want this to happen, it's okay not to want it, but it's not up to the children if that happens or not. That's up to the adults involved. So gentle yet firm boundaries, but really empathizing that this is tricky. It's tricky for adults, so it's definitely tricky for children.
Is there a critical age, you know, the age of seven, you have a, I understand, I'm asking the question, you have formed a personality?
Yeah, I mean, by a lot of developmental psychologists in particular would advocate, you know, the age of seven is really important. Now, I don't want to sound like children wake up on their seventh birthday and that's it, job done, you know. And obviously, as children continue to grow and develop, they will respond and react to various life events that will change who we all are. We didn't all stop developing at the age of 7. But that being said, the sort of default character traits of all of us have essentially been laid down by the age of 7. And what that really...
Now, what would that be like? Whether you have a temper, whether you're...
Well, it's more to do with your sense of self and understanding yourself in the world, that I am a person in the world, but there are people and a world outside of me that I have to learn to interact with, to respond to engage with, that it isn't all about me. I mean, we often hear the phrase about young children, His Majesty the baby or Her Majesty the baby, because they really do believe,
run the show,
absolutely,
dominate the show. Yeah.
And it takes them years. I mean, you know, Marion, we could argue it can take some people their whole lives to work out they're not the world.
Indeed,
but it definitely takes children a number of years, and certainly beyond the age of 3, to understand that, oh, I'm a person in the world. The world is bigger than me, and I need to learn myself here. And then they go through stages of developmental play, play being their language, where they begin to process and understand, who am I in my family? Maybe I just about get to grips with that, and another sibling comes along, and then I have to relearn all of that.
How tough is that?
It's really difficult for a child. And even when they're delighted and happy to be a big brother or sister, they still have to learn to share their parent with somebody new. And I think that's also really pertinent with the topic of blended families, because you're now not only sharing your parents with your siblings, you're now sharing your parents with a new partner, maybe with new children. And that's something that is an adjustment. And of course, I'm going to react to that.
And the notion that the person that so-called the interloper, shall we say, what's the attitude there?
I think it depends on the circumstance of the relationship, the primary relationship's demise.
Yeah.
So if that relationship has ended and a period of time has passed and the feelings have, you know, processed and both adults have moved on emotionally, if not literally, emotionally in their individual lives, it can be easier to be the new person coming in. If, however, the circumstance of your coming into one parent's life is very close or maybe even apart or intertwined with the initial relationship's breakdown, that's much more challenging for everyone involved, including the new adult coming in, who, of course, their role isn't to parent your children. And that's really important, that because children will very often say, he or she is not my mum or dad.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to validate that and say, you know, you're right, they're not your mum or dad, but they are an adult in our family. And that's, again, coming back to your boundaries. So you cannot shout or you cannot swear at, you cannot hit at this person because they're an adult in our family. They're somebody in our lives now. And they're somebody who cares a lot about you. They're not your mum or dad, but they care about you.
And how long does that take to go to filter through? I'm aware of somebody, I'm sorry, I won't mention her name, who was widowed. And I think it was 7 children, and met a man who had 7 children.
My goodness.
And
that's
they
quite
got
the merger.
Yeah, it's quite a merger, yeah. And she looks very well on it. But it's a hard one, because presumably, I know people like to be nice and they like to be generous and they like to be all those kind of things. But I've seen things like jealousies come into it.
Well, that's a really interesting one, because again, it depends on, I mean, that's a lot of children involved.
You're
telling me. Depends on the ages involved as well. And it's not like everyone's life is the Brady Bunch. You know, in the real world, it takes time. So with that kind of a situation, I don't want to sound negative about blended families, because
there's
so much good there as well, because, you know, when a new relationship is starting, the whole, it's a beginning and there's hope, and hope is something that's really positive. And I think for children, if they see their parent is happy and their parent is really content and likes being with this new person, that can be immensely reassuring to children and go, well, if my mum or dad is happy and this must be a good thing, so I'm going to get on board. That can really happen, but it might not happen initially, because we're protective of the people we love. And there may be a little bit for children going, well, who is this person and who are they bringing in? It also is going to affect what I'd call birth order in family.
Yeah, go through that.
So if you're thinking about birth order displacement, which is what we're really wondering about here, in terms of, if I am the eldest of my sibship, my group of siblings, and in the new blended unit, I'm suddenly displaced from my role as eldest and I become become middle or, you know, middle child in the new group, then that's going to affect the dynamic as I understood it. Because maybe as eldest child, I had certain entitlements. I went to bed latest. I got to hang out with my mom or dad when everyone else was gone to bed for those 10, 15 lovely minutes before my bedtime. And now in this new dynamic, actually someone else is the eldest and they get to stay up later than me. That sounds so small to us as adults. That's huge to children. That's a big unsettling. Now, I very much look at birth order in terms of our psychological birth position rather than ordinal. So ordinal will be literally the order you're born
in. 1, 2, 3, 4.
I don't see that simply being the eldest decides what your personality traits are going to be. There's too many other variables, you know, socioeconomics, parenting, environment. There's too many other influences that will affect how we each perform. But my psychological birth position is the position or the role in my family I have assumed and what I act out. And the position I could be the second child, but I could take on traits of a classic eldest child, you know, because that's the role I've acted. I may be a single child between two parents who've split. And now as my parents have formed new relationships, I'm not a single child. I'm the single child of my parents, but I'm now the youngest child of one blended family and the middle child of another. I have to juggle three psychological birth positions within my family unit.
This sounds like awfully hard work.
That's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah.
So that's why I keep coming back to the acceptance and empathy to say, this is hard. But to be quite creative about it and say, you know, do this sigh and go, whew, that's a lot. Let's sit down together and draw this out. Let's look at all the people in our family. Let's look at who everyone is to each other and where are you. Children really want to be claimed by their adult carers, their parents.
Do you remember during the second last divorce referendum, hello divorce, goodbye daddy. Is that reflected as a truth, really?
I'm going to say no, because I think that, again, now there will always someone listening might go, it's true for me. I think
yes,
there will always be exceptions.
It's true for a lot of people.
But I think in general that when we talk about blended families, it's not that in the formation of a new family unit, the previous unit is abandoned. It's not that the parent of the first relationship is, and it should not ideally be this way, cut or shut out. They're still that child's mother or father. They
yes,
still
but
have
you
a
know,
really
human
important
nature,
role.
If the mother and father are at war.
Oh, that's different.
You know, and we have courts full of,
yes.
of cases down there. And it looks sometimes, and you hear people say, that the father just gets shut out. Kind of go away, cough up the money, and we'll get on with our lives.
That hasn't been my experience
okay.
of working with families. I'm happy to say. I'm aware that, of course, that's the truth for some people.
Yeah.
I think in general, and if you are parenting, as I believe, with very rare exception, most parents are, with the best interests of your child at heart,
yes.
then you know your child will thrive on a healthy, calm, consistent relationship with both of their parents. Of course, I don't want to sound like the Mary Poppins of all of this
yes,
because
yeah.
the reality is if there is high emotion, high active emotion, hurt feelings between two adults, maybe one partner did not want the relationship to end and is still very much working that through, it can spill out over onto children. And that's not in children's best interest. So in that situation, parents may make a decision, we've got to get to a different place before we can co-parent together. We've got to take care of ourselves so that we can take care of our children together.
Yeah.
But I think there is a role and should always be a role for both parents in a child's life.
And as you observe, now it's obviously in camera, but I mean, you hear coverage on Sean O'Rourke's show, etc., some of the most complicated things, you know, based on people's fury, I presume, with one another or resentment or out of love, well, certainly out of loveness and all of that. Do you think the courts give the kinds of answers that would fit in with your concept of how to handle this?
Not always. And I don't know that the courts can necessarily do that. I think often the courts will bring a somebody like me in for an opinion on what is in the best interests of the children. I think the courts have acts available to them where they can say, look, we've got to explore what's being alleged and said by both parties. And they will ask an independent court-appointed psychologist to conduct an assessment to that means.
Okay.
But I think ultimately we're really looking at how can we work together to really progress so that children see it's not that I've lost anything, but I've gained. This is a bonus for me.
Okay. Caller on, Marion, haven't been through two separations. I've three children with two fathers. One of the dads maintained communication and respect from the beginning and has made life much easier for the children. The legal system could help by ensuring that counselling is part of the separation. So that one worked, and that's good, because we were just getting away there from our Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah.
So back to her happily blended family. And you say it can be done.
It absolutely can be done, but that's not to say it's easy, and it doesn't just happen with magic. It's work. And that can often be that there may need to be some parental psychoeducation work, therapeutic parenting, and even some family therapy sessions that actually everybody in the family unit could partake in.
Right.
But I think if the adults can ensure that the adult stuff stays between the adults, then the children will feel that things are okay.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much
thank
indeed
you.
For that. Joanna Fortune, psychotherapist, and we'll take a break.